I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. We were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
School of Humans.
Okay, yeah, so this is a very relevant reference. Yeah, it's a reference from 2014. But this is a history podcast, so if you don't like dated references, maybe this isn't the show for you. Anyway, Game of Thrones, when it wasn't terrible, we're in season 4. And for me, this is the worst, most cringy moment of the series. It's when Sexy Pants Pedro Pascal plays Oberyn Martell, and he's about to do a fight with Sir Gregor Clegane, who's a big-ass dude who everyone calls the Mountain. And Oberyn wants to fight him because he thinks that Sir Gregor raped and killed his sister. So he's, you know, ready to fight. And so Sir Gregor, he's like a big old dude, very scary. But Oberyn ends up outwitting him, gets him on the ground. But before he kills him, he really wants the Mountain, Sir Gregor, to admit that he raped and killed his sister. Okay? And here's, I guess, the hubris, etc., the whatever, that's the fatal moment, because when Pedro Oberyn Pascal Sexy Pants is just a parading around, he's distracted momentarily, and then that's when Sir Gregor gets back up, tosses Oberyn onto the ground, and then proceeds to press his thumbs into his eye sockets, thus crushing his eyeballs and his skull and killing him. You guys remember that? Wasn't that fun? Wasn't that a fun moment in TV? And the thing about that, it's like, oh yeah, that happened in the fictional land of Westeros. Like, that's just a fantastical thing. There's so many fantastical things there, like dragons, magic, twincest. It's so brutal that there's comfort that it's like not the real world, you know, because people in the real world, they wouldn't try to throw someone on the ground and gouge their eyes out. That would be crazy. But wait, actually, people here in the grand U.S. of A. used to gouge each other's eyes out all the time. I mean, not all the time, but enough times that people had to legislate it. This was specifically happening in the American South and on the Western frontier in kind of the revolutionary to post-revolutionary period. Dudes were just fighting out in the streets, out in the fields, out in the mud. And specifically, they're trying to get each other's eyes. Because if you got an eye, that meant you were the fucking boss, dude. So that's today on American Filth. This is American Filth. I'm your host, Gabby Watts. Every week, I bring you a filthy story from American history. Today's story, gouging. I said this, I think, maybe in the last episode, but it bears repeating because it's basically the thesis of the whole show. But when we think back to the founding fathers, we kind of paint this beautiful picture of freedom and independence, fighting tooth and nail for morals, values, you know, something you believe in, virtuousness. But I think it is safe to say that a lot of Americans were really just debaucherous piles of garbage. After all, this is where the English sent their debtors, their criminals. Also, I just feel like if you're someone who wants to, like, move to a place across the sea and start an entirely new life unencumbered by government, I don't know if you're necessarily, like, a great person. Like, why do you gotta start your life over? Anyway, and, like, yeah, the Founding Fathers, when we think about freedom, we think about how virtuous they were or whatever. But freedom to other people just also meant you're gonna have a fucking good time. Like, Americans, they were drinking 1 billion drinks a day, going to the brothels. And some of the Founding Fathers just really didn't approve of their behavior. In 1777, when they were in Philadelphia for the fourth meeting of the Continental Congress, John Adams was appalled by the behavior that he saw in the streets. He wrote to a friend, "Indeed, there is one enemy who is more formidable than famine, pestilence, and the sword. I mean the corruption which is prevalent in so many American hearts, a depravity that is more inconsistent with our Republican governments than light is with darkness." Anyway, and that's just about the people living in the cities. If you went down to the South and over to the frontier, ooh-wee, you're gonna get a whole different class of people. So let's go visit a remote small town and see what's going on. So in May of 1806, a traveler named Thomas Ashe arrives in a small town called Wheeling, Virginia. Ashe, he's not an American. He was born in Dublin in 1770 and was a writer and a journalist. And he's often quite judgmental and dismissive and tends to exaggerate. But historians do think that some of his descriptions of Virginia are credible, so let's get into it. When he first arrives in Wheeling, he seems to like it. It's a port town, well situated for trade. It's got about 250 houses, some of them made of brick, some of stone, mostly of logs though. There are some fine mills for flour and timber. He's like, Wheeling, it has a bright future ahead of it. He said, "On the whole, I give this place a decided preference, that it will ultimately injure and rival all the towns above its waters." But after a few hours in Wheeling, he's gonna start changing his mind. The first issue for him is the original settlers of this area. This town was originally on the frontier. He notes not just of Virginia, but also of America. So a lot of the people who originally settled here were outlaws. And he said that they had formed a nefarious republic. He says, had they attended to worthy commercial pursuits and industrious and moral dealings, in place of rapine on Indian property, drunkenness, horse racing, and cockfighting, their town would have rivaled Pittsburgh long since and have now enjoyed a respectable name. Alas for them. Think about how great they could have been. They could have been like Pittsburgh. Ashe does say that there are some upstanding citizens that have settled here, so it's not just ne'er-do-wells. One of those virtuous, upstanding citizens that he meets is a Quaker. And the Quaker, when he's talking to Ashe, he also tries to be super optimistic about the future. He's like, "I hope more Quaker types will come settle here, and then we can gain control of the municipal affairs of the town." He's like, "I want to abolish cockfighting, horse racing, fighting, drinking, gambling above all, and enforce the observance of the Sabbath and other solemn days." Ashe is like, yeah, that would be great for this place. How wonderful it would be to have more Quakers to calm down this nefarious republic. But Ash does realize that, fuck, it's gonna take a lot more than Quakers to get this place into shape. The Nefarious Republic is definitely winning. He's like, the majority of the present inhabitants here have no means whatsoever of distinguishing Sunday. Even on occasions of business, the smallest occurrence will draw them from it and expose it to total negligence. Basically being like, these people don't even know what day of the week it is, and they're super lazy. They love to be distracted by stuff. They don't accomplish anything. And he's saying all of this before he's even seen someone gouge another dude's eye out. So here's what happens. While Ash is in Wheeling, there are two dudes down at the public house, the pub, getting drunk. And they start arguing about their horses. One dude is like, my horse is so fast. And the other dude is like, no, my horse is faster than yours. Ash gets a look at the horses and describes them as two wretched animals. So they're probably not too fast in general. But in Wheeling, whew, they might be very fast. But anyway, the two dudes at the pub decide to bet on whose horse would win in a race. Once the wager is set, they ride off to the race course. And not only did the people at the pub go out to watch the race, Ash says that 2/3 of the population of the whole town just stopped what they were doing to go watch. Even blacksmiths and the people working on the ships in the port, they all just left and were like, well, the work is done because something much more important has come up. Ash is like, what the heck? He says, I asked a proprietor why the warehouses did not remain open. He told me all good was done for the day, that the people would remain on the ground till night, and many stayed till the following morning. That's right, the people of Wheeling, Virginia, they are ready to fucking party. Ash goes over to check out this Virginia recreation. Once he arrives at the race course, the victor was already celebrating from the first race. But once that contest was over, everyone was like, let's do some more racing and betting. For the next race, 6 horses run around the course. But the race is so close that nobody can tell who won. The crowd starts to shout at the umpires to make the call. But then when they do, the mob doesn't like the call, and Ash says a kind of general battle ensued. At the center of this battle were 2 men, a Virginian and a Kentuckian. I guess it was their horses' victories that were in dispute. So obviously instead of racing again, they're going to beat the shit out of each other, man to man. Now this is exciting. But before the fight could start, the 2 men have to decide what kind of fight they're gonna do. And the 2 choices? One is a fair fight, or they could do another thing called a rough and tumble. I mean, obviously they're gonna go with the rough and tumble. It's Virginia, after all. Okay, be right back.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We were just in Wheeling, Virginia, and those two dudes, they're about to do a rough and tumble. And our traveler, Thomas Ash, he's not the first person to encounter this kind of fight in the frontier southern states. The name rough and tumble became part of the lexicon in the early 19th century, but they were going on for decades before that. Basically, it's a fight where you could do whatever the fuck you wanted as long as you didn't have a weapon. Here's how Ash explains it. When parties choose to rough and tumble, neither the populace nor individuals are to intermeddle or hinder either combatant from tearing or rending the other to the ground or in any other situation. You startle at the words tear and rend, and again, do not understand me. You have heard these terms applied to beasts of prey and to carnivorous animals, and your humanity cannot conceive them applicable to man. It nevertheless is so, and the fact will not permit me the use of any less expressive term. Historian Elliot J. Gorn wrote about these rough and tumbles in a paper called Gouge and Bite, Pull Hair and Scratch, a title reflecting just some of the fighting maneuvers that will be employed. He traced these fights back before the Revolutionary War, mostly through the accounts of travelers and oral histories, and he called it Southern backwoods brawling. And these fights would start because of just the smallest incidences. Like if they just said one small thing that offended you, you had to defend your pride and honor. Like in 1774, there was this guy from New Jersey who was working in Virginia, and he witnessed a fight that started for no reason in his mind. He was just like, wow, these Southerners will really find any reason to fight. Like, there was one dude who called another dude a buckskin and a Scotsman, which were both euphemisms meaning you're poor. But anyway, the New Jerseyan is watching this fight, and he said, every diabolical stratagem for mastery is allowed and practiced. Basically meaning, literally, anything goes. Dudes would just, like, bite each other, choke each other, scratch each other, kick, box, smack. They would rip each other's flesh off. They would try to draw blood. Just anything. Another traveler saw a particularly distressing combat move. This guy was traveling through Virginia and Maryland in 1800, and he claimed that he saw multiple men castrated during fights. He said, these wretches endeavor to tear out each other's testicles. But here's where we get to the good stuff, the juice, the eye gouging. That was the main goal. Like, if you gouged out someone's eyes, you'd basically be the winner. Another traveler, Charles William Jansen, he was bopping around Virginia as well, and he got this description of the gouging from a helpful North Carolinian man. He said, when two boxers are wearied out with fighting and bruising each other, they come, as it is called, to close quarters, and each endeavors to twist his forefingers in the earlocks of his antagonist. When they are fast clenched, the thumbs are extended each way to the nose and the eyes gently turned out of the sockets. The victor, for his expertness, receives shouts of applause from the sportive throng, while his poor eyeless antagonist is laughed at for his misfortune. Like, really, the eye gouging was super important for the rough and tumbles. Some dudes even kept their nails long just in case they found themselves in a brawl. Jansen was traveling in 1807. He said, passing through the state of Georgia, our attention was arrested by a gouging match. We found the combatants fast clenched by their hair and their thumbs endeavoring to force a passage into each other's eyes, while several of the bystanders were betting upon the first eye to be turned out of its socket. For some time, the combatants avoided the thumb stroke with dexterity. At length, they fell to the ground, and in an instant, the uppermost sprung up with his antagonist's eye in his hand. 4 exclamation points. The savage crowd applauded, while, sick with horror, we galloped away from the infernal scene. Jansen was even more alarmed when he saw some people use their teeth in the matches. He said, like dogs and bears, they use their teeth and feet with the most savage ferocity upon each other. He met a man in North Carolina who would sharpen his teeth with a file. And the guy told him all these stories about the times when he bit off ears and noses and cheeks. Another guy was in a brawl with multiple people, and he gouged out 3 eyes, bit off an ear, and tore off some cheeks. Usually it was the lower classes and backwoods people who engaged in this type of fighting. You know, a lot of the upper class people, they were doing like dueling or boxing, something much more civilized. But sometimes the upper class would still resort to this type of fighting. Like one time, there's this poor guy. He got pissed at a doctor, and then the doctor challenged him to a rough and tumble. But the doctor, that was stupid of him, because the poor guy, he flew at him and in an instant turned his eyes out of his socket. And while it hung upon his cheek, the fellow was barbarous enough to endeavor to pluck it out entirely. Even ye old legendary Davy Crockett rough and tumbled upon occasion. He said about one of his fights, I kept my thumb in his eye and was going to give it a twist and bring the peeper out, like taking up a gooseberry in a spoon. But unfortunately for him, his fight was interrupted at the pivotal moment, so he didn't get to take out the eye. Now, these fights were common enough to call for legislation. As early as 1746, the North Carolina Colonial Assembly made it a felony to, quote, cut out the tongue or pull out the eyes of the king's people. They passed this after 4 people died in a rough and tumble. Then a few years later, they added slitting, biting, and cutting off noses to the list of felonies. In Virginia, similar laws were passed in 1748 and then updated in 1772. There was to be no, quote, gouging, plucking, or pulling out an eye, biting or kicking, or stomping upon citizens. This continued after the Revolution. South Carolina passed a law in 1786 that made premeditated mayhem a capital crime. Basically, you could be put to death for severing someone else's body parts. All inclusive, whichever body parts you want. But these laws didn't seem to be very effective or enforced. The brawling continued across the southern states and frontier. So let's go back to that nefarious republic. Let's go back to Wheeling, Virginia, and that brawl. And let's see what happens after these soothing advertisements.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back in Wheeling, Virginia. We got the Kentuckian and the Virginian. They're about to fight. And almost the whole town of Wheeling is gathered around to witness the slaughter. The traveler, Thomas Ashe, sizes up the contestants. The Kentuckian is bigger, but the Virginia seems more wily and smart. Ding, ding, the rough and tumble begins. They start exchanging blows, hitting each other. No one has the upper hand yet, but then the Virginian decides to take a new approach. Ash writes, "The Virginian contracted his whole form, and summoning up all his energy for one act of desperation, he pitched himself into the bosom of his opponent." Basically, what the Virginian is doing is he's headbutting the Kentuckian. And it works. The Kentuckian falls to the ground, out of breath. And the Virginian knows this is the time for me to try to gouge his eyes out. Ash continues, "The Virginian never lost his hold. He kept his knees in his enemy's body, fixing his claws in his hair and his thumbs on his eyes, gave them an instantaneous start from their sockets. The sufferer roared aloud, but uttered no complaint. The citizens shouted with joy. They're like, I love when eyes are gouged. Yeehaw, terrible violence. Now, if someone gouged my eyes out, I would stop immediately. But the Kentuckian, he keeps going. The Virginian has him pinned down to the ground. But the Kentuckian uses his strength and grabs the Virginian in a bear hug. The Virginian loses his grip on the Kentuckian's face, and locked together, they roll over and over each other several times. Everyone in the crowd is hooting and hollering. They were like, yeah, the Virginian is gonna win. This Kentuckian is fucked. His eyes are useless. But no, now there's this tumbling thing. He's unrelenting. The Kentuckian gets on top of the Virginian, and, well, I'll let Ash explain it. He got his enemy under him, and in an instant snapped off his nose so close to his face that no manner of projection remained. Jesus fucking Christ. Now, at this point, if you had your nose ripped off, you might think that you'd give up. But no, the Virginian reaches out, and Ash again, fastening on the under lip of his mutilator, tore it over the chin. Jesus, fuck. Now, this is when the Kentuckian gave out. Sure, having your eyes gouged out, easy peasy to get over. But to have your face ripped off, that's when it's time to call it quits. And the hometown hero Virginian is named the victor. Instead of immediately seeing the doctor who had come to fasten his nose back to his face, he's hoisted up in the crowd and paraded around the racing grounds. The winning rougher and tumblerer. The Kentuckian hobbles back to town to find help from another doctor, with his eyes hanging from their sockets and his lip hanging from his chin. After the fight, the crowd enjoys some whiskey and some biscuits as some more horse races are about to start, and hopefully more gouging. Ash, though, he's seen enough for the day, and he goes back to town to have dinner with his new Quaker friend. At dinner, the Quaker is upset about what happened, but he's also like, it happens all the time. He's like, three times a week there are these horrible fights. And then he was like, twice a year they do these horse races that often descend into fighting. And then the fights continue for like 2 weeks. It's a nightmare. The Quaker says, few nights elapsed without the exhibition of this new gymnastic. Few mornings appeared that did not bring today a friend or acquaintance with the loss of an eye or the mutilation of half his features. So rough and tumble, that's just another day in Wheeling, Virginia. So here's a little postscript, a little cherry on the top of Ash's experience in Wheeling. So after he saw the rough and tumble, after he has dinner with the Quaker, he goes back to his inn. Where he's like, finally, I can go to sleep and relax. But alas for him, after the excitement of the day, everyone in Wheeling is partying at his inn. He's like, fuck, there's so much noise. He looks in at the pub that's attached to the inn, and he sees there's a bunch of people there playing cards, drinking, smoking, dancing. And then suddenly, while he's looking in, another fight begins. He's like, what the fuck is this place? He says, a drunken politician seized a friend by the throat and threatened to annihilate him if he did not drink damnation to Thomas Jefferson. But actually this fight, it's good for Ash because eventually everybody gets kicked out of the bar. And finally Ash is like, oh, I can go to sleep and relax. But before he goes to sleep, he writes his final scathing review of Wheeling, Virginia. He says, I curse the ferocity of the manners which reign in this place. It is intolerable. it is infamous. So I don't think he's necessarily going to come back to Wheeling again. 1 star on Yelp, I guess. So guys, this has been another episode of American Filth. And as per usual, we learn a lesson from the story in the episode. And I think the lesson is, when you're fighting, like, wear goggles or something so they can't push your eyes out, you know? Just wear like an eye shield. Don't let them get your eyes. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. It's hosted and written by me, Gabby Watts. I also sound designed and mixed this episode. Theme song is by me and Jesse Neiswanger. Our senior producer is Emilio Brock, and our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, and Elsie Crowley. Leave us a review, subscribe, like, etc. You can also follow along with the pod on Instagram at American Filth Pod. Talk to you next time. Bye. School of Humans.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.